there and welcome to our show, The Shit No One Tells You About Writing. I'm best-selling author Bianca Murray, and I'm joined by Cece Lira of Wendy Sherman Associates and Carly Waters of PS Literary. Hi everyone, today's guest is the author of more than 60 novels, including those in her number one New York Times and US Today bestselling series, The Black Dagger Brotherhood. There are more than 30 million copies of her novels in print worldwide, and they have been published in 25 different countries around the world. It is my pleasure to welcome J.R. Ward.
Oh, thank you very kindly. Thanks for having me.
For those of you who are not watching on YouTube, you must go and have a look at YouTube. I am holding up the stunning cover of the book we're discussing today, Crown of War and Shadow. It is absolutely beautiful, not just the front of it. So the sprayed pages are absolutely stunning. And I think that you're going to have a whole series of this in which the sprayed pages are going to make up an image. Is that correct?
Yes. And I think it's one of the brilliant packaging ideas. Bramble is like so good in the romanticy space with these. I feel like this book is a work of art. And the fact that there is a collectible four element picture that everything's going to form at the end was great. When we were doing like the casings for all this, and she was like, all right, so the next three books, what are the people involved? I was like, oh my gosh. So we had to like space it all out. It was great.
Wow. And also for the people who love maps, I'm holding it up here so you can see the stunning maps inside. And when you take off the flap cover, you can see how beautiful the hard copy itself is. And what I find quite interesting is that we recently had our deep dive in which we had a lot of agents and editors from across the world who weighed in on this. And they, one of the theories was, is that young people today are not spending their money on sex, drugs, and rock and roll, which is what my generation did. They aren't interested in all of that. And they are more interested in spending money in collectibles, and books have become some of those collectibles. JR, what do you think about that?
I can't comment about the younger generation and what their predilections are, but I can say that what I loved was going to a Polycon last year and seeing all these incredible authors, and whether they were self-published or indie published or trad published, and they had each one of their books is becoming like a world that creates not just a relationship with the reader, with the words on the page, but it's the merchandise and it's these covers and it's the series. And I think it's just a whole nother level to reading, which everyone said was going to go away when ebooks came out. When ebooks came out, it goes back to Ghostbusters, where it's like, print is dead. Well, it's not dead. And I love that the younger generation is teaching us that there's a whole new evolution to reading now. And I just love it.
I have to agree with you there. And what I also love is how they will buy the same copy of a book that they love, but with three different covers, right?
Yes, absolutely. And there actually are a couple of different versions of this book that are already coming out. They're going to be coming out soon. I love that too.
Yeah, and I think there's also like a market on Etsy where there are some people who will design special covers for books, whether it's with leather bound, etc., so that people can customize covers for the books that they love. So I've always said that for me, reading and collecting books are two completely different hobbies. And I think the younger generation are really, they're really proving that.
I agree.
Okay, so let's dive into the book. This is your first romanticy. And so I would like us to break down kind of for our listeners the difference between paranormal romance and romanticy in terms of tropes, in terms of the genre, in terms of how you approach it.
So for me, after having been in the paranormal space for 20 years, the Black Dagger Brotherhood is grounded in this world, this common world. So whether it's flashbacks back hundreds of years ago, or whether it's now in Caldwell, or whether it's 33 years from now in Caldwell, New York, the commonly accepted version of reality, yes, there are myths and there's spirituality and there's a whole new tradition and they have been going parallel to humans, but there is a common vocabulary as to what the quote-unquote real world is. With fantasy, this is a totally different world that exists nowhere. There is no earth. There's no whatever. This is a totally different realm with different rules and different magic and creatures that don't exist on earth. So I think what's interesting about it is in both cases, you're dealing with the human condition in extraordinary circumstances. What I've heard about people say about the vampires is that all of the emotions are human emotions, that when they're reading, they feel on behalf of the characters, whether they're suffering or they have joy or whether they're scared or whether they're fighting. Those are all the common human emotions. And the same is true for romantasy. It is another platform to have the reader enter into a space where they feel things. They feel things and they experience things from the comfort of their own homes.
Yeah, I mean, and romanticism has just exploded now. It has become so popular. So I know that you said in another interview that you actually had the idea for this book like 20 years ago. And then when your publisher or your editor asked you, you know, would you consider writing romanticism, you were like, well, I have this idea from ages and ages ago.
Yes, that's exactly. Well, the thing was, is that I was fired after my first four books, and the publisher was right to do it because they were critically well acclaimed and very well received, but they didn't develop an audience. And so the Black Dagger Brotherhood was like my Hail Mary to just try and not be a lawyer for the rest of my life. And the agreement I had with the pictures in my head was that I would write whatever I'm shown. I don't think up these books. I don't have any influence over the people in them. I don't develop storylines. There's no Pinterest boards. There's no inspiration. I have movies that play in my head, and my job is to transcribe them such that when the reader reads the words, they can approximate what's in my head. And so the Black Dagger Brotherhood was so out there for what was happening 20 years ago that I was like, this is never going to be bought. And even if some publisher is dumb enough to try and publish it, it's never going to find an audience. And so I was like, well, let me go and see about some other things that I have in my head. And I had this vision of four people sitting around in this round circular turret in a castle, in a medieval-like castle, around a golden compass that was flaring light into the undersides of their faces. And I was like, oh, well, I got to find out about this. So I just kind of followed that and saw where it went, and I made this outline. But then the Black Dagger Brotherhood took off, which I'm very grateful for. And then, yeah, so 2 years ago, my agent came to me and was like, you don't happen to have any, I don't know, romanticy stuff hanging around? And I was like, as a matter of fact, I do. So I revised everything and like got it so that it was ready. And yeah, I've been really lucky. And I really love writing. I love writing romanticy. It's really super fun and horrible at the same time.
Yeah, and coming back to what you said about starting with that image, I think you said as well about Crown of War and Shadow is that you started with an image in your head, I think, of Sorrel with the cloak over her head, the pox cloak, and you kind of had that image. And again, it was like, okay, who is she? How am I going to follow her into the story?
Yeah, and I think so entering, like what I find is that the pictures beget more pictures, beget more pictures. So if I start with one of the ones that I'm shown, and then I can just kind of watch her move and where she's going, who she interacts with. And the story kind of breathes on its own. And the story is in charge of where we go, not me. My only thing that I do is I kind of put the scenes that I'm shown, because often they come out of order, is to put them in a good chronological order. And then in the case of the Black Dagger Brotherhood, I also have to assess, like, who's the best point of view for this particular scene. Because this is first person, Crown of War and Shadow, I didn't have to do that. But it was also interesting because as first person, the reader can only be shown or know or extrapolate that which Sorrel experiences, thinks, or considers. So that was both good and bad. It worked well for the purposes of some of the big highlights of this plot. But it also is a challenge because you've got to give this rich sense of the world, but you've only got that one point of view.
Yeah, the thing with first person point of view when it comes to world building is that the challenge there is that we are meeting them at some point in their life. They have lived in this world their whole life, so they aren't going to point out everything to the reader and explain it to them because it's backdrop to them. You know, when you leave your house today, you aren't going to be like, well, this is what my front door looked like, and this is what my street looked like, because it's all you know, it's faded into the background for you. And yet you have to do world building for the reader and create enough of a visual so that what you have going through your head is something that they can envision as well. So can you speak a bit about the challenges of that?
Well, I mean, I think that's, I don't want to say this in a wrong way, that was not a problem for me, because I can see the world out of Sorrel's eyes, okay? But then I can also take myself out and I can watch her. And so if I'm standing outside of her and I'm looking at her and she's in the Lake of Lost Souls and there are these big boulders around her and then the giant black bird of prey comes after her, I can watch it like a movie, or I can be in her eyes on the horse and feel the wind and feel the horse charging and hear the thundering hooves and see the dust kicking up and feel the great backdraft of this giant wings over her. So I think it's figuring out, because I often feel like only the first reader, because it's all revealed to me, like I kind of have to figure out, like, what is captivating to me, even if Sorrel is not captivated by it. As I watch her, as I experience it, even though it's her in her world, I'm still seeing it for the first time. So I kind of judge on that, like what catches my eyes as we go through these things, if that makes sense.
Yeah, totally. I'm someone who also, I am a complete pantser. I never plot anything. My last book was a closed room murder mystery. So it was interesting to pants that. For me, and that was actually going to be a question I was going to ask you, is are you viewing her from the outside or are you inside of her? Because for me, I am inside the character and I view the world from inside them. And to me, it's so fascinating that you're able to dip in and out. Does that help you, JR, in terms of interiority? Because with this kind of book, especially with the slow burn kind of book, we need to know what she's thinking. We need to know her feelings, what her theories are about what's happening, et cetera, et cetera. And that is so much easier when you climb into the character. But when there's action scenes and things are happening to her, perhaps then it's easier to climb out and watch it from the outside. Or is that not necessarily how it works?
So I think you're right. I think the reader has to know what they're thinking. But I also think if a character is on the page, I feel like the reader gets to know them as a friend. And in the way a friend can describe to you something that happened to them, you kind of know their orientation, right? You're right, though. I do agree with what you're saying, that the interiority, I think is the word you used, is important. But I also think it's important that however the character is portrayed, that the reader begins to extrapolate and predict the way they're going to act, because that gives credibility to that moment in the book when things are a surprise. One of the things that's great about life, I think, and also horrible about it is we have these briefcase of assumptions that we take with us wherever we go. And the assumptions are both like our privilege or our upbringing or who the people around us are, our orientation towards all kinds of things, our character. And then every once in a while, life is going to corkscrew on us. And what we're going to do in that moment or after that moment is resolved, we're going to look back on everything that happened and be like, there were the bench posts that I missed, or I misinterpreted, or I took for granted X, but Y was really what was meant. And I feel like that's the books that I respond to, not that I read much anymore, but the books that have moved me are the ones that have revealed something about me as a, like that I'm not even aware I'm bringing to the page as I read, because you're like, oh, wait, yeah, life really is like that. Or, oh, gosh, you know, I didn't see that coming. So I think that, yeah, that's an interesting, it is an interesting balance. How much do you show versus how much do you let the reader extrapolate?
Yeah, well, and just based on what you've just said, I mean, true character is revealed in moments of adversity. We can tell ourselves that we are good people, that we would respond in a certain way, but when all hell breaks loose, that's when true character is revealed. And what I love about how we unpack Sorrel is that even though it's a slow burn, is that everything about the way she reacts to what's happening to her tells us something about her. You know, when she interacts with Merc and he's like, you must do this. And she's like, the hell I'm going to do that. I'm going to go check on my friend because my friend is my priority. So everything in the book, not just what she says and feels, but what she does is constantly revealing character.
I agree. And I think that like, and that's, maybe that's, I can't really cop to having any smarts in this because again, I'm just a secretary. I just watch these movies, but I do feel like it's sort of like the way I watch people in my own life. Like not like in some like creepy voyeur system sense of the word, but I find people fascinating. I like to hear my friends talk about their lives. I like to listen and hear their perspectives because I just think people are interesting. And I wonder if that isn't like a writer thing. Like maybe part of the reason why we write is because, you know, it's not just the pretty pictures and it's not just the challenge of it. And it isn't not, it's not just what our brains do, but I think it's just really another extension to finding humans fascinating in good ways and bad.
Hello there, writers and publishing folks. The one and only Wayday is finally here at Wayfair. From April 25th through to the 27th, you can score the best deals in furniture, decor, and more. We're talking up to 80% off with free shipping on everything. Wayfair makes it so easy to find what fits your style and your needs, whether you're looking for a new writing desk, spring decor, or outdoor essentials as the warm weather starts to ramp up. If you've been following along with me, you know I've been slowly and intentionally replacing some older pieces in our home. I finally retired a table that we've had for 15 years. I found the perfect replacement on Wayfair, a beautiful console table for my bedroom. It's exactly what I needed to hide away all those little knickknacks, and finally giving me a place to display my lovely shoe collection. Wayfair made it so simple to narrow down exactly what worked for my style and my budget. Because I'm being really selective with these upgrades, I love shopping with Wayfair Verified. It's like a shortcut to the good stuff. I love an editor's choice. Their team of product specialists vet everything by hand using a 10-point quality inspection, so I knew I was getting a quality piece that was going to last. Plus, everything ships fast and free during Wayday. I got my table a mere days from ordering, and they kept me informed every step of the way. Instead of locking my shoes away in the back of my closet, I love having them on display. Thanks, Wayfair Verified, for helping me narrow down my choice so quickly. Wayday is the sale to shop the best deals in home. We're talking 80% off with fast and free shipping on everything. Head to wayfair.com April 25th through to the 27th to shop Wayday. That's wayfair.com. Wayfair, every style, every home. It's hard to believe, but it's my 10th wedding anniversary this year. And my husband and I are planning on what we want to do to celebrate when we got married to 20-somethings fresh out of grad school. Just starting our careers, we didn't really want to invest in a big honeymoon. It felt a bit irresponsible when we wanted to buy a house and all those grown-up things. But fast forward to 2026 and my Italian husband and I are finally planning a wine tour in Italy. If you have travel coming up, join me in using Rosetta Stone to learn some local languages. There's something about spring that feels like a reset, fresh energy, and the motivation to try something new. Learning a language is the perfect way to channel that momentum into a skill that's going to open up the world. Rosetta Stone has been the trusted leader in language learning for 30 years. Their immersive, intuitive method helps you naturally absorb your new language without memorizing random vocabulary lists or relying on translations. Instead, you get to connect with words, visuals, and meanings in context, the way that language is meant to be learned. Working in the publishing business means my days are often packed with meetings and manuscripts, but I love how simple these lessons are and they fit into my schedule. Whether I have 5 minutes between emails or an hour on the weekend, I can access my lessons from my desktop or the mobile app. Since we're heading to Italy, I've been using the True Accent feature, which gives real-time feedback on my pronunciation so I can sound more natural when visiting the local vineyards. It's like having a personal coach help me communicate with confidence. Rosetta Stone offers 25 languages to choose from, including Spanish, French, German, and Japanese. You can find the one that fits your next big adventure. Ready to start learning a new language this spring? Visit rosettastone.com/today to explore Rosetta Stone and choose a language that's right for you. Go to rosettastone.com/today now and begin your language learning journey.
Yeah, I think you've hit on something there in terms of writers, because I think I can remember the very exact moment when I realized that other people don't think the way I think. There was a moment where there was some argument when I was, I don't know, 10 years old, no, younger, probably 8. And I was like, so obviously, this is the right thing. And somebody had the exact opposite view. And I remember my mind being blown and being like, oh my God, there are people who walk through this world and their thoughts are not the same.
Yep. No, I agree. I agree. And that's the things that bring us together and tear us apart too, you know? And I do think that, yeah, I mean, I think with this book, I don't like to use the word journey because I feel like it's kind of an it's been worn out. But watching Sorrel change over the course of the book, and how she starts, she describes herself as a mouse among rats at the beginning, and then where she is in the final scene, I feel like it is just this big yawning vista of just someone who's coming out of their shell and discovering things about themselves and things that they couldn't have possibly have extrapolated. But that's kind of like what I like about life in general is, how are you growing? How are you challenging yourself? As you said, like, character is revealed in moments of tension and moments of conflict. And so, yeah, I mean, I think good books are about conflict. And that's not just two people not getting along, as you said, it's also external forces. And how do we respond to adversity or challenges or fear? And where are we brave when we don't think we can be? And that's what I love about romanticy. Well, and also about the paranormal urban fantasy, is I think that you can construct situations, or have them revealed in my case, in these worlds that can be so much more vivid and high stakes than they are in, like, the real world. Because, like, you know, having a flat tire, that is a big problem. And how you handle your flat tire can reveal your character, but it's a hell of a lot different than when you're fighting a dragon, you know?
Yeah, when your dragon gets a flat tire, that's much more interesting.
That's true.
In terms of character arc, this was, again, so important. So we say that you want to go on a journey with the character, and who the character is at the end of the book needs to be so different to who they are at the beginning of the book. And certainly there have been incredible books where the character stays exactly the same throughout, but they change everybody else around them. But this is what makes you feel like you know her, and it makes you protective of her. So Sorrel has these secrets that are kept from her, and she believes something about her past. And I don't want to give anything away there. But again, what I love about that is the surprises that come. So on the podcast, we talk about planting curiosity seeds. So you need to plant a seed that the reader goes, ooh, that's interesting. I'm going to keep reading for the payoff of that. And you do that so well with her character that we keep going, ooh, you've got my curiosity piqued. When are we going to find out more about that? And that leads to a whole page-turning story as well as the character arc.
Well, again, I can't really cop to thinking any of this up. So I don't really, you know, it's not anything that I did constructively. It's not any forethought or anything. But I do think a movie's good if you give a crap about the people who are in it, you know? And it's interesting because morally gray heroes like Merc, he's morally gray. Like, you don't really get a sense that he's taking her through the Badlands because he's a nice guy. That's not the arrangement. And so, I think that we watch things because we either find something of ourselves in the character, an outsider, someone who is shy, or someone who doesn't feel like they can be brave, or we want to see what someone will do. Like, oh my God, you know, what is he or she going to do next? Or you want to be like, is this guy going to turn out to be a good guy after all, or is he just a shit, you know? And so I think you're right. I think, you know, we have to either find something that resonates within us for a good reason or a bad reason. And then, you know, I think in this book, Crown, I think there's a lot to find ourselves in. I certainly found that way while I was watching the movie.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that it's just the watching the movie. So I know that you will always be surprised. And I'm the same as this. I feel like my reader is going to be surprised if I'm surprised. If I'm totally taking the reader by the hand, the reader is going to see where we're going. Whereas if we end up there and I'm like, how the hell did we get you? And the reader's like, how the hell did we get you? So long as it's plausible, it's absolutely great. Have there ever been instances where you have fought back against those visions or those characters and been like, you're wrong? Or is it that you trust them 100%?
Well, so I have a problem. I learned with Lover Revealed, which was the fourth book in the Black Dagger Brotherhood series, that if I tried to get too fancy pants, tried to get smart with the pictures, they shut up. And then I got nothing. I got no voices. I got no places. I don't have anything. I have a blank slate. Because my publisher back then was worried that the books were getting a little too long. So they were like, you know, just be aware that you're starting to, like, create problems for packing because you're not fitting into the cardboard boxes anymore. So I was like, all right, I got a great idea. It was like chapter 4 or 5 in that book. And I was like, I'm going to consolidate some of these scenes. So I'm going to, like, I know these scenes are going to be here, but I'm going to mash them all together and I'm going to tell the reader what happens. And the pictures and voices shut up. So the other time is there was something in Lover Unbound, which was the 5th book, that, you know, at the time needed to be kind of changed. And so I did go against the pictures at that point. And it was the most miserable writing experience I've ever had. It was like pulling teeth. That book was difficult as hell to write because it was not the book that I was shown. And so the only time I get into trouble is if I don't do what I'm told. And I'm a very disciplined, structured, controlled kind of person. So the fact that I have to make peace with this ether, or I don't have a job, is like a trick of fate that makes me laugh to this day. It is just so funny because that's not the way I kind of run my life. But I don't know. I think that the pictures don't care about my opinion about things. They don't care about anything. They just are what they are. And so the answer is no, I don't get writer's block. And I don't not go, although that is an interesting question, because what happens if something happened where, like, I'm like morally or I couldn't do it? It hasn't happened yet. I hope it doesn't. But yeah, no, like, I guess it kind of also happened with Lover Unbound. So I don't know. But I would say 99.9% of the time I do what I'm told and everything works out.
That makes me laugh so much because I'm an A-type control-freak Capricorn in every area of my life except for writing. And so I say that the universe gave that to me as my playground. It's the one place where I don't need to control everything. And it sounds like the same for you.
It's exactly the same. Exactly the same for me.
Yeah. You said that writing the first draft of this book, and I quote, was an effing nightmare. Can you take us through that?
Oh, it was so awful. I can't even tell you. It was miserable. It took me 9 months to write this book. I'm a fast writer, so I usually write about 3 books a year. And I, you know, that's just kind of the way it works. And I work 7 days a week. I don't take time off. I don't, because what am I going to do with myself? This was horrible. It was awful. Figuring out so I had written one other first person point of view book and a short story, but that's very different than doing a romantic-y whole world, start off an entire series first point of view. It's a totally different ball game. And then figuring out, since I knew the whole thing, not just about what was going to happen in this book, but where we were going in the other books and the world, how much do I have to show the reader so that the reader is going to have an idea and feel grounded enough to enter into the story? That was the thing that I was worried about. And it was getting that balance titrated correctly. If I put too much in, you know, I don't want to tell everything. I like to show things. So I'm like, you know, how much getting that correct, that done correct. And then there was problems also with pacing. You know, the first part of this book is a little bit slow for me. Usually I am a bang, we're off to the races. But what I learned about this book is that I had so much to kind of, like, it was like getting a giant airplane off the tarmac. Like, you got to get this momentum going and then it takes off. And so I was like, well, you know, did I do that right? Oh, it was a nightmare. It was a nightmare. And then, like, all the words and the different, like, describing the different creatures and, oh my gosh. So it was a thing. It was a thing.
But it's interesting that no matter how many books you've written, every book teaches you how to write it, you know?
Agreed. Totally agree with that.
And
different lessons every time.
Yeah. And some are easier than others. And some you really have to wrestle with along the way. JL, thank you so much. And that's it for today's episode. I hope you'll join us for next week's show. In the meantime, keep at it. Remember, it just takes one yes.